Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Nice buns, soft, fluffy, and ultra low net carbs. Discover Hero Bread, the delicious ultra low net carb bread with incredible taste and texture. Hero Bread has 0 grams of sugar and is under 100 calories per serving. Plus, high in fiber with 5 to 10 grams of protein per serving. Available on Amazon.com, Walmart.com, and at Hero.co. That's Hero.co. Delicious, ultra-low net-carb Hero Bread buns and tortillas. Soft and fluffy, high in fiber, and with 0 grams of sugar. Up to 10 grams of protein, coming in at under 100 calories. Order today at Hero.co and use the code AH10 to get 10% off your first purchase. That's AH10 at Hero.co. Hero.co. Order from Hero.co now and get 10% off your first purchase with promo code AH10. That's 10% off with code AH10. Hero.co.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch."
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply.
The expectation was that everyone has to become something and help each other. We were 10. We did. After a while, our father and mother, they retired, and we were supporting them. I supported them almost till they died. We were trained to support each other. So that's, we still do that today. I have one in Vegas as a doctor. I have one in London as a lawyer. I have one in Sweden as an engineer as well, living in Sweden with me. So we are scattered all over the place. I have some in Nigeria as well. So we were trained to help each other, to stand by each other.
So you don't look practically any different from when I last saw you, which is like so many years ago. It's about a quarter of a century ago.
Yeah.
Incredible. So I need to know your secret, that's all. But I want to start off by saying that you are Dr. Alban. Your real name is Alban Nsomo Nwapa.
Yeah.
And names in Africa often have a meaning. So what is the meaning of your name?
Nsomo is a good pathway, the right way to go. That's the right path to walk on.
Okay, that's one of it. What about Alban? Is there a meaning to that?
Alban is English name.
Oh, right. Okay. So that was
St. Alban. You have it all over London, St. Alban and all that.
So that's a bit of a religious name, I think. St. Albans. Yeah, yeah. Okay. What was growing up in Nigeria like? Because you grew up in a very small town, didn't you? Oguta.
Yes.
Can you sort of describe it to me for someone who's never been to, a small village in Africa, to really understand what it was like growing up there and what was there?
What was there was not much there. The infrastructure is, the little or no infrastructure. Running waters were kind of not too much. Running waters and electricity was not too much. And dogs in the street running up and down. People don't own these dogs. And of course, I went to school there. And everyone knows everyone. Well, that's pretty much what it is.
Is that good or is that bad when everyone knows everyone?
It's good security-wise. It's good because if anything happens, you know who to talk to. You know who to go to. It's good somehow. But then you cannot go. You cannot mess up. You cannot do anything wrong. If you do anything wrong, everyone knows you.
So what did you do that was wrong when you were young?
We don't say that, Steve.
Okay, we politely pass over that one. You grew up in a large family, didn't you, with many brothers and sisters. How many people were in your family?
10, five brothers and five sisters.
And where were you? Were you in the middle or at the...
I'm in the middle.
Okay, that's a shitty position to be in.
I know. In the middle, you know.
So what was it? Was there sort of a fight for attention from your parents? Because I think in a big family, quite often, there's a little bit of competition in the family to get, you know, you want mum to do this or dad to do this. So you're trying to get their attention. Was it like that? And were you someone who had to fight for attention at that point?
Yeah, there was a lot of attention. There was a lot of competition. But we were taught that we shouldn't do that. So we grew up not trying to fight each other. So whenever anybody wants to fight, the dad or mom will be saying, no. But it was competition because everybody wants to eat that. Everybody wants to sleep in that particular room. Everybody wants to be in that bed and all that. But we were taught not to do that.
So, you know, if you say that your parents gave you that as something that not to be in competition,
yeah.
What else did they, would you say, from your childhood leave you with that has stayed with you your whole life? What sort of, you know, morality or what sort of ideas did they give you that have stayed?
Well, the first thing he said, he was not that rich. And he said, you are 10. What I will say is that everyone will be educated. I wouldn't buy a Rolls Royce. I wouldn't build big house or anything like that. But education is the key to success. Education is, that's exactly what is going on in Africa. If people were educated, it would be easy to understand what's going on. But illiteracy is causing so much problem. And if I was to be a president of Nigeria or a president of Africa or wherever, I will make sure that education, everybody will go to school. Just like in Sweden, if you don't go to school, the police will come and get you. In Nigeria, that's not the case. So education is all. That's the basic. So my mom and my dad, they promised all 10 of us education. And we did get that. And that is not even a small education. Everyone is a graduate of a university. From the 10 of us, we are doctors, lawyers, and engineers and all that. So, and they taught us that it's very good that we learn how to speak out, tell the truth, and be straightforward. That's what I got from them.
What sort of music was played in the household? What sort of music did your parents listen to?
Well, they listened to the local stuff that was played in the village there. And then we did listen to the big Nigerian act, Fela Kuti, Fela Ransom Kuti, Sonny Ade and all that, you know. So we did listen to them as well.
I mean, Fela Kuti was the father of Afrobeat. He was also quite politically minded and social minded. Yeah. So how important was that part of his music to you growing up, to have those ideas about your society?
He was good. And I listened to Fela Kuti all the time. One of the guys I did listen to was Fela Kuti. So his political speeches and lyrics and all that, you know, every Nigerian liked him. Not only in Nigeria, in Africa and the world. So Fela Kuti did influence my way of thinking, definitely.
What about your brothers and sisters in terms of what they listen to? Because, I mean, I was brought up in a family with two brothers. I'm the youngest. And obviously, you know, my eldest brother was a Beatles fan. My other brother liked sort of oh God, which music that I really didn't like at the time, which was American sort of folk type music. and I sort of grew up in the Bowie era, you know, so Bowie was my sort of first hero. So what sort of music did they sort of bring to you? And then what was the moment where you changed your musical tastes?
Well, we did listen to this local Nigerian music, and then we did listen to Fela, everybody together and all that. But as we grew up, we started listening to what was going on in the 70s in America. We started listening to like the Kool and the Gang, Diana Ross, James Brown and all that. And all of us, all the whole family did listen to that. So we grew up listening to the same music. Definitely.
I mean, when I hear that you grow up in a sort of family that has five brothers and five, there are five boys and five girls, you're one of 10. Yeah. And there must have been some big social, I find it a really nice thing that you have a huge family and you're probably never bored because you've always got someone around.
Yeah,
probably always busy. Is that something that you look back at and say that is something that was very special today, just to look back at that and say to be brought up in such a large family was a really good thing? Or is it something that you look back and go, actually, I'm glad I don't have that?
No, it's not really. I live in Sweden. I have two kids. And when I look back, I said, oh, we were 10. Now I have only two. Sometimes I feel that there was more togetherness in my family than the one I have now. The one I have now is just two girls, one 18, one 14. So there was more togetherness. There was always somebody there. There was always somebody to look after you. There was somebody you have to talk to. I prefer the big family than the small family.
Were there different expectations of life, do you think, being in that type of family?
Well, the expectation was that everyone has to become something and help each other. That was the expectation. We were 10. We did. After a while, our father and mother, they retired, and we were supporting them. I supported them almost till they died. Both of them, they passed. So we were trained to support each other. So we still do that today. I have one in Vegas as a doctor. I have one in London as a lawyer. I have one in Sweden as an engineer as well, living in Sweden with me. So we are scattered all over the place. I have some in Nigeria as well. So we were trained to help each other, to stand by each other.
So you were brought up and educated in this small town. And then eventually you and I presume also your brothers and sisters started traveling. So where did you go? Where did you dream of going? And then where did you go?
Well, I ended up in Sweden. I left Nigeria. I came to Sweden. I was visiting an uncle that was working in the Nigerian embassy in Stockholm. So I ended up here. I was to do this dentistry 5 years and go back. But that didn't happen. I stayed here. And then under the time I was doing this dentistry, this course in the university, I lacked a lot of money. I didn't have money. I had to DJ in between records. I had to DJ in between the studies as well, and to make money to support the studies. And that got me into music. And that's why I never went back.
So going back to when you first came to Sweden, what were your feelings? Can you remember the first day that you were in Sweden and what your feelings were? Because, I mean, just on a weather basis, you know, you go from one of the hot places of the world to one of the cold places of the world. Yeah. And it sounds superficial and everything, but it makes a big difference. You know, when you go somewhere and it's really cold, you do feel closed and isolated. And, there's a different mentality that goes with the weather often. So what were your first impressions of Sweden?
Cold. That's a short one. Very cold, but such nice people. I mean, if you think about living in Europe where they don't speak English, everyone spoke English in Sweden. Everybody, it's like Germany. If you go to Germany, you find it, some people do, some people wouldn't. In Spain, it's the same. In Italy, it's the same. But in Sweden, everybody speaks English. Just like you go to Netherlands, most of the people speak English. So I liked it a lot. It did help me a lot. So if I find myself in a country where nobody spoke English, it would have been very difficult. But it was cold, ice cold.
Now, you said that you DJed in a club. I think that was Alphabet Street. But the fact that you don't just become a DJ. So was that the first job you had, or did you do other things, or how did you actually become a DJ?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was actually a cleaner in this club. And the day the DJ didn't show up, the owner told me, you have to jump in for him. So how do I do that? Never DJed before, never changed records before. So all he said, just go, do the best you can. So I had to jump. So I became a DJ because the DJ never showed up. So I jumped in. The mixes were horrible. The tracks were stopping in between. People were wondering what the hell is going on. So you can imagine the beats, the BPM, the tempos were, the variation in the tempos were horrible. But at the end of the day, there was no DJ and someone has to do it. I did it. So after that, the club owner said, next time you try again. That was it. That's how I continued, and I had to learn how to do it. At the end of the day, I became one.
I mean, that's amazing, because normally when you fail at something like that, you know, the audience aren't very pleased and they don't want you back because you're not really gathering an audience. How did they react to you, the audience?
We had to tell them what happened, that the DJ didn't come and somebody has to do the job. They understood that. And I had a headphone and I was listening to the tracks and I could say, oh, I remember he plays this one. Oh, I remember he played that one. Oh, I remember, you know. So I was just with my headphone, I was listening and then playing what I felt that I knew he was playing. That was it. And at the end of the day, he was okay.
So you actually, when you took over then, you actually used the records of the permanent DJ that didn't turn up. I presume. So you had known from, you know, cleaning what he was playing in the background.
Well,
then you just sort of chose some of the same records and played them. What was different about his musical taste to your musical taste?
Well, I became influenced because I had to play exactly what through my headphone I remember this, he used to play this. So I became influenced with what he was playing because I know that's what people like. That's why they came to the club. So I had to stick to that. So once I remember this, okay. That was it.
So when did the moment come that you said to yourself, because I imagine it was then and not even later with actually making records, but even then at that point, you must have started to enjoy yourself as being a DJ. Was there a moment where you started to enjoy that side of life more than going and studying dentistry?
Yeah, after this DJ thing, and then I started, you know, I was interested in it, and I wanted to take it further. I wanted to move further with this. So I opened this club, Alphabet Street. And Alphabet Street was not this club that the DJ didn't show up. It was another club. So after that, I got interested. I became interested in that. I said, okay, let's do this Alphabet Street, and I'll be the DJ. And as well, in this Alphabet Street, Dennis Pop played with me. Rob and Ras also did play with me in different days. No. So when I played, I used to change records. I used to talk in between and rap or talk. And it was just all not good at all. It wasn't good at all. But Dennis Pop saw it and said, come on, we should do something with this. So I said, okay. I thought he was joking. And then I got the beat. Empty beat, Hill Africa. And I said, come on, this track has some jungle drums in it. The title must be something with Africa to do. So I started writing on the lyrics. And then I called the song Hill Africa, Tell Me How You Doing. And then that was it.
So, okay, let's go back a little bit. Because Rob and Raz had already been successful with Layla K. There's, you know, I think only a sort of couple of years before you were successful with Hello Africa, that they'd had their success. So they were already doing well. Dennis Pop had already really started and to sort of garner a name himself, hadn't he, at that point?
Yeah, he didn't do much that time. I mean, just like me and him. We only known people were Robin Ross and Leila Kay. So Dennis Pop was just a DJ. He was a DJ, trained DJ, and I was just starting.
So with Dennis Pop, you sat down and you wrote Hello Africa. Who contributed what? How did that work, that process of work happen between you?
He just gave me the beat. He did the beat already. He just gave me the beat. And when I listened to the beat, I had some jungle tribal drums on it. And I said, it has to be something to do with Africa. So the lyrics must be something to do with Africa. So I went home with the demo he gave me. There was no vocals, no melody, no nothing. It was just the beats. So I went home, I wrote, and I came back. And then after 1 or 2 weeks, and then we recorded it.
So where were you with your studies at that point?
My studies, I finished 1987, graduated 1987. The Hello Africa thing came 1989 and was released 1990. So I got that demo 1989 from Dennis Pop. And it's Alphabet Street. I was running it from 1986, under the time I was studying as well. So I graduated 1987.
So had you started work as a dentist by then? Had you actually started?
I did work 87, 88 as a dentist, 1 year. And then in the studio, 89. And then when the track got big, 1990, I left the dentistry, just left it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, that is a huge decision because that, you know, it's one track.
Yeah.
And I know it's a great track. And I know it really, you know, it launched your career. But it may not have launched your career. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So how aware were you that you were taking a risk? Or did you think, oh, well, I can always go back and be a dentist. It's easy.
Yes, of course. If you have the certificate, you have the degree, you can always go back. Even today, I can fall back to it if I want. But when the song got big, it was difficult to do the two of them at a time because of the travel. I was traveling a lot. So I just definitely need to quit dentistry.
What I loved about that track was there was this sort of longing in the lyrics for Africa.
Yeah.
Was that what was in your heart at the time? Can you just sort of describe that and tell me about that?
It's like when I had the track, I just said it has to be something with Africa to do. And I went home and was writing 1 or 2 weeks. I don't remember exactly how long it took. But I felt that this is exactly what is going on. It's a good question you ask now, Steve. Because Africa and Africans don't understand that unity, you can't do nothing without uniting. You can't do nothing without being in peace with each other. Nothing happens. So I had to tell them to unite, stop fighting, stop forcing and fighting, and unite, and then you should be able to do things together. This tribe is fighting the other tribe, and that tribe, that's why I meant that the Manika tribe, the Hausa tribe, the Fulani tribe, the Buya tribe in the track, because these tribes are always fighting each other because of a fucking piece of land.
And the only way out is to unite. I mean, when we are in Europe, probably Sweden and Denmark will be fussing and fighting, but the next day they're sitting down drinking coffee. That's how it is. Yeah, over here is people drink coffee. People might argue in the parliament. In the parliament, they sit down there, they argue. But when they get out of the parliament, they're drinking coffee. And that's exactly the tone I wanted to set in Africa, telling them, stop the fussing and fighting, unite. Because without unity, nothing goes on. And that's exactly what is going on in Africa today. No unity, no development.
One thing about that track is that it wasn't an instant success. You had to really work on it to be a success. What did you have to do? Because I know that you have immense drive. You're one of those people that I know has immense drive. Because I remember when I worked for MTV, that the boss of MTV came to me one day and said, "You won't believe who's just called me." And you had called him to ask him to put Hello Africa on the playlist. Now, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. That's unusual. It isn't really. It might be the management. It might be the record company. But it's not really the artist who phones up and says, "Hey,
I know.
Please play my track." So, where does that drive? Where do you think that drive comes from? And what did you have to do to make that song successful?
Well, that drive is very, very important. I believe that the artists themselves, sometimes you have to speak out and get to a point where you associate yourself with radio, TVs, and all that. So I did that in Sweden. I went around with the record to different labels in Sweden. I did that. The label didn't do it. The Dennis Pop didn't do it. He was just sitting down there as a DJ. So that the song got big and that Dennis Pop was able to produce more other stuff is because I did the work. I did the groundwork. I ran around with the song to different labels. Finally, it got released. I sold like 6,000-7,000 copies a day. And I called MTV, I called everyone. I even called you. I have good contacts with you. I had good contacts with everyone in MTV, Simone and all that. That's the only way out. I cannot be hiding behind the label that will do, you know, it's good to have a good contact with the artists and the label and the radio and TVs as well. I just felt that, and it did work out.
We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
To ask you the one part of that question again, because of the drive, where do you think that drive came from in your life? Do you think that that's something that you inherited from your parents, or where was it?
Mother and father, right. You got it. Yes. That drive came from my parents. Yes, he did.
And their drive was what? To give you a better life, to give their family a better life.
You should speak out. You should try. You should work hard. You can get it if you really want it, but you have to try. You have to strive. You have to strive. You have to work out. You can't sit down and want things to happen when you don't do nothing. If you do something and if it doesn't work, then you know that you've done something. But you cannot sit down and wait for something to happen when you haven't done anything. So I didn't really believe in the label to do those things for me. I did most of the job myself.
It's amazing. Eddie Grant also had a track called Hello Africa. Was that something that you had sort of inspired you, or was it something that you knew about even at that time?
I knew about the song, but when you listen to the Grant and listen to mine, my track is a lot of African drums in there. So yeah, I needed to talk about a lot of politics. Even in Hello Africa, I talked about Mandela. I talked about Martin Luther King. Mandela had a dream and all that. Martin Luther King had a dream. And what it really was that it does not really, the proverb in the song, Hello Africa, it does not really matter whether a cat is black or white. What really matters is for the cat to catch a mouse. So what does it matter who you are? White or black or that or whatever you are? Who cares? It's for you to get the job done. But the cat is to catch the mouse. Even the cat is black or white or whatever the cat is, it doesn't matter. So that's what it is.
Eventually, you came to having a contact with Logic Records in Frankfurt, didn't you?
Yeah.
Which is, I think they were the ones who were probably the most responsible for getting a video made and to get that right. video promoted. And that video was made with Paul Boyd, who later worked with, I think it's one of his first videos, and later he worked with Lenny Kravitz and Kylie Minogue. So it was a push in his career as well. What do you remember about that video shoot, and why do you think that video worked?
We shot that video in Africa, in Kenya, and I liked it. He was very strict in his approach. He was strict. He said, "You do this. You go there." There was no storyboard. So a big storyboard that we worked with at all. When we got to Kenya, when we got to Africa, it was like impulsive. It was like, we do this, we do that, because we didn't really follow any storyboard. So he was strict. I liked him a lot for that. And the video came out very good. It was one of the best videos at that particular time.
It was something that was very different. That's why I think it really worked. Something very different about it to other videos that were being made at that time. You say that he was strict, and that's something that you really liked. That's something that you are. That's something that your father is.
Yeah.
And what was the reaction of your father to the fact that you were becoming a pop star and you'd given up dentistry, something that he obviously wanted you to become?
They did not like it in the beginning. They didn't like it.
What did he say to you?
They always thought that pop stars are drinking a lot. Pop stars are on drugs. This is a common thing that people think. You know, the pop stars are drinking, drunkards are drinking, they are doing this, they are doing that. But drinking and drugs, two most important things they said. So they thought I would find myself there. I said, no. And then when the song got bigger and bigger, and they sit down in Nigeria and see the video, watch the video, and people were calling them, say, "Oh, I saw your song on MTV, the video was on MTV," and all that. So gradually, they started accepting the situation. And at the end of the day, it became okay. After like 91, 92, when It's My Life came, that was like the boom. And they accepted it immediately.
You say that they accepted it immediately, but It's My Life had, what were the lines in It's My Life? "It's My Life, take it or leave it, set me free. What's that crap, Papa, know it all. I've got my own life. You've got your own life. Live your own life and set me free." If I was your dad, I heard that, I'd think, I don't know if I'd be that pleased. I mean, that was you expressing your freedom away from your family and your previous life, as it were. So how did they react to those lyrics?
I think that they didn't really listen to the lyrics. I think so.
Oh, that's brilliant. the thing is that, so they were able to become proud of you for something else. That's really where it led, was it?
Yeah. And at the same time, I think with a couple of years to come after that, after the release of Israel Africa, they still saw me as their son, and that I was not drinking. When I come home to Nigeria, I visit them every Christmas. So I went home 90, I went 91, 92, 93 before they passed, 94. So they saw that I wasn't drinking and I wasn't taking any drugs. So they were happy with the situation.
I mean, they weren't that wrong. I mean, pop stars do drink and do take drugs. I mean, you don't, and I'm sure there are lots of others that don't, but there are certainly lots that do. So I can understand if they have a fear of that, why they had a fear of that. There's some truth to it as well.
Yeah.
Do you think the fact that you had that distance, that physical distance from Sweden to Nigeria, was the reason that you could finally follow something that your heart was really into? Do you know what I mean? Because I think once you get away from the parents and once you're out of their reach in a way, It sets you a little bit free from being the child. You become the adult, and you become the one who chooses what they want in their life.
Yeah, definitely. That's true. But what could they do? They couldn't have done anything because I was 4,000 or 5,000 kilometers away from them. And I, what can I do? All I have to do is to be a good citizen. And this is my new home. I abide to the rules and regulations around me and be a good citizen. I've always strived to be that. And I'm still the same, trying to be a good citizen of Sweden. And I have a Swedish passport, living here for so many years now. So that's how it is. If you're in Rome, you behave like the Romans, wherever you are. And that's what I believe in. And I think everyone should do that.
How did, at that point, I mean, with It's My Life, because that became such a phenomenal success.
Yeah.
And that track was the thing that sort of really established you. You had the first one with Hello Africa, but It's My Life was the one that then really established a career, I think. Yeah. And it also brought you attention. It brought you fame. I presume it was the first stirrings of some money as well. So it was a change in your life. Yeah. How did you deal with that change in your life?
Well, it was a lot of money from that track. Sold so much. Even today, the money I still get from this track, you can imagine. And this track has been remixed a lot. And this track has been used in commercials, like the Tampax commercials in the UK and in many other countries. It's huge. And still, people are still remixing this track. And it's been in so many commercials all over. Denmark is using it. Even now, as we talk, there's a commercial with it in Denmark now. It's My House that they're using it for. It's like a furniture company that are using it now. So, great track and generated so much money.
When I talked to Mikael Munzing, who you probably know from Frankfurt,
Yes.
He told me that The Power made him 300 million, which is such a phenomenal amount of money. Yeah. I mean, is it in that region because it's such a big song?
Yeah. It is. The thing is that it's still generating so much money today. It did, really. It's difficult to tell you how much money he made, but was a lot of money and so many tours in a year and there that this track generated so much touring. Even now, the 90s is big everywhere. So radios and TVs play it, commercials, and big track all time. If you could live with this track, I wouldn't even do any other thing.
I mean, you went on to have a number of other hits with No Code, with Sing Hallelujah, and it goes on with quite a few hits. And it went up to about 1997, I think. Around that.
Yeah.
That sort of those years. Now, that's in pop history, that's a long time. I mean, many pop stars have around about 4 years maximum in terms of their longevity, their success, or their big successful years, let's put it that way. And then in 97, for you, it sort of changed. Along comes different styles and then you're out to a certain extent. A bit like I was with MTV, there was a certain period of being in, and then you're out. Now, I remember when that period when my career was, inverted commas, a little bit over, I would be recognized as MTV. Oh, look, there's MTV. There's Steve Blame from MTV. Yeah. And it was always in connection with my past that I felt a bit detached to, and it wasn't me anymore. So how was that for you in those years after the main, success? Did you feel a disconnect to who you, how you were perceived and who you were as a person at that point?
Well, it's apparently the same thing, but when you walk in the streets, you see people say, Hello Africa, they're screaming. There are two songs they always sing. One sing, It's My Life and Hello Africa. So people are singing this track. Or even today, in the street in Stockholm, you see someone, Hello Africa, and you look back and somebody shouting. They wouldn't call you Dr. Alban. They wouldn't call you your name, Alban. They would say, Hello Africa, So that's been a part of me, and it's nothing I can do about it. I'm stuck with that.
But you're stuck with it in a good way, in a sense, aren't you? Because there's also that period. There's that period where there's a lull, and it does seem like in life, you say the 90s are back in. You know, we had a long period of the 80s back in, and all these artists, including you, sort of come back in waves over the years, and have a sort of rebirth, as it were, which is sort of what's happened to you because of that, of all these things are in. How do you deal with it differently today than back then? Because the first time that you achieve all these things, the first time that you get money, the first time that you get fame and success, you deal with it a little bit differently because it's new and you don't really know what to do. That's my perception of it. Later, when it comes again, it doesn't feel so important. You can deal with it in a different way. How do you approach it today that's different to back then?
Well, this is a good question though, see, because when it's big and hot, you know, you just don't know how to deal with it. And then you're probably also younger at that particular time. So things, you know, and that's how many artists, many pop stars take to drugs and alcohol, because it's difficult, they find it difficult to manage the situation in which they are. And then I never took to that drugs and alcohol. I never did that. And when the careers finished, just as we were talking about, you between for you and in MTV and for me, like 1997, or when the career will go down or went down, what do you do? If you're still not stable enough, you will take to more drugs and more alcohol, because that fame is not there anymore. You are not in the front page anymore. You are not in the radio every day like you were before. You are not in the TV. So it was easy for me to handle it because I wasn't dealing with alcohol. I wasn't dealing with drugs. It was a little bit easier for me to do. But if you are already dealing with it when you were artist and big and everything was huge, and suddenly it's no more there, the tendency that you increase your alcohol consumption or drug consumption is there. So I felt good that I wasn't dealing with that.
But, okay, that's, in a way, it's like you have this enormous drive, and then, in a sense, the drive where you've put that drive is taken away. And I understand your point that some people, they go in a different direction. I did it myself. You go in a different direction. But you still need to find something that fulfills you. You need to find something where you can put your drive and where you feel comfortable and where you feel your life is important for you. So what was that? What did you find at that point? Was there something else? Was it a family? Was it, I don't know. Where did you put your drive at that point?
Family. I came to the point, I said, okay, my oldest one is 18. Actually, well, I was late in getting kids. I was late. So I felt that, okay, I was doing this traveling and all that. It was my priority at that particular time. And when the career went down a little bit, 1997, I said, come on. Old enough to get kids, wife and all that. So I stuck to that. I said, okay, this is what I have to do. And then that I will still be touring and doing music part-time and things like that. So family was it. That was it. The answer to your question is family.
So your father was very strict. Your father wanted you to have an education.
Yeah.
What did you want, or do you want? I mean, if your child is 18, I presume he's started going to university by now. What do you want for your children? What did you install in them that is the same or that is different from what your father installed in you?
That education. And they're doing very well. They're doing absolutely very well. They have A in everything. So education, and that is what I still feel that is needed in most developing countries. Education is it. Without education, these countries will remain undeveloped. That's the difference between the so-called developed countries and underdeveloped countries. The developed countries, everyone is educated. The underdeveloped countries, people are not educated, and people are not forced to be educated. And if people are forced to be educated, they will make correct decisions, who to vote for, and what to do.
But whose fault is it that they're not educated? Is it the systems in Africa, or is it the Western world, which has taken all the resources of Africa?
I don't know. It's so many reasons, Steve. But I think that all the presidents of Africa should give free education to at least secondary school level. If you don't give a free education to university level, do it at secondary, after elementary school, do it at elementary school even, or second. But in Nigeria, millions of kids are out of school. In Africa, millions of kids are out of school. So what happens is that one rich man comes to a village in Africa. I said, hey, there's an election. You have this money, £1 each. You vote for this party. They don't even know what the party stands for. They don't know who is the man, the figurehead in the party. But they are being given money. They are not educated. They don't have TV. They don't have radio. They don't have nothing. So this is the problem. Education remains, for development, education remains the key.
You've also been involved in sort of education campaigns. You know, I mentioned the Trap No Coke, you know, earlier. There was also, you also re-recorded Hello Africa as Hello Sweden during the midst of COVID, didn't you, for people to wear masks. So you've been involved, you've often been involved in education things. But I want to leave you with a question which I find really fascinating because, you know, with all your background being brought up in Nigeria with this very big family, with your father installing this moral of work, of getting an education in your life, and then in your 20s, you becoming a pop star, and you mentioned that your son is 18. What's going to happen when he's 23 and he turns around to you and says, Dad, I'm giving up being a doctor. I'm going to make music. What would you say to him?
Well, it's a girl. What I'll say to her is that you can't force anybody to do anything. So not even in Africa, not even in Sweden. So what I will do is I will try to talk sense into her, tell her what I think it's right to do. And then the decision is ours. She's 18 now. She's going to be 18 now. So I can, it's her life just as the song is. It's alive. So I will just try to talk sense. That's the only thing I could do. And then after that, she has to make that decision.
Now, Dennis Pop was obviously a very important person in your career, mm-hmm. And life. And when he passed, how much of an effect did that have on you as a person?
Well, all we created, the sound we created and the way we did it, all that, I had to start looking for somebody else to replace him. It was a difficult time. And I think he passed 96. So, and after 94, when we did Lucas Talking, that period of 2 years, he did Ace of Base, he did Backstreet Boys, was busy. So I said to myself, come on, we opened the gate for lots of people, lots of the Swedish dance music, the European dance music, even the world dance music came in. He started producing so many people. But me and him did open the gates for a lot of people. So it was missed. It's still being missed today. So I started looking for somebody else, but it's difficult to get somebody as good as Dennis Pop. He was a genius.
Well, I'll leave you with this. I'm going to be in Sweden soon, and we're going to meet probably because I'm going to be there at this Dennis
Pop. Not probably. We're going to meet.
That's it. So listen, I want to thank you because you made some tracks. You made some amazing, great pop music tracks of an era when I was on MTV, and they were part of the MTV playlist because you made sure they were. And I'm really happy for you that they're still paying off today. And that you obviously have a good life in a country that has adopted you and that you have adopted. So, Dr. Alm, thanks very much. And I'm going to see you at the Dennis Pop event because I'm sure you're going to be there.
Yeah. Definitely. We need to meet. Definitely. It's been a long time. Yeah.
Up there is an interview I recommend. Down there is where you can find all the podcast interviews. And here is where you can connect.
Trying to grab all the groceries in one trip? Oof, not how you would have done that. You know sometimes less is more. Like when you drive less and save with the USAA annual mileage discount. USAA, get a quote today.